Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it's Friday, August 12th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. There's a lot to cover. We're going to start off on the international landscape and so on, and then we'll reach out to local stuff. Well, I guess the most important thing is, based on what we've learned with regard to China and Pelosi and so on, it seems that the United States, Indonesia, and Australia are holding live fire drill amid the China tensions. So it seems that soldiers from the United States, Indonesia, and Australia joined a live fire drill on Friday, part of an annual joint combat exercise on Sumatra Island, amid growing Chinese maritime activity in the Indo-Pacific region. A total of more than 5,000 personnel from the United States, Indonesia, Australia, Japan, and Singapore are participating in this year's Super Garuda Shield exercises, making them the largest since they began in 2009. The expanded drills are seen by China as a threat. Chinese state media have accused the United States of building an Indo-Pacific alliance similar to NATO to limit China's growing military and diplomatic influence in the region. Well, the United Kingdom, Canada, France, India, Malaysia, South Korea, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and East Timor also sent observers to the exercises, which began early this month. Well, the United States Indo-Pacific Commander Admiral John C. Aquilino said that the 14 nations involved in the training are signaling their stronger ties as China grows increasingly assertive in claiming virtually the entire South China Sea and holds exercises threatening self-ruled Taiwan. Well, the destabilizing actions by the People's Republic of China, as it applied to the threatening activities and actions against Taiwan, is exactly what we are trying to avoid, he said in a joint news conference with Indonesian military chief General Andika Perkasa in Batu Raja, a coastal town in South Sumatra province. Well, we'll continue to help deliver a free and open Indo-Pacific and be ready when we need to respond to any contingency, Aquilino had said. Indonesia and China enjoy generally positive ties, but Jakarta has expressed concern about what it sees as Chinese encroachment in its exclusive economic zone in the South China Sea. Now, despite its official position as a non-claimant state in the contested South China Sea, Indonesia has been dragged along, quote-unquote, in the territorial dispute since 2010 after China claimed part of Indonesia's exclusive economic zone in the northern region of the Natuna Islands, said Kani Rahakundini Bakri, a security analyst at the University of Indonesia. Well, the edge of the exclusive economic zone overlaps with Beijing's unilaterally declared 9-line, demarking its claims in the South China Sea. With increased activities by Chinese Coast Guard vessels and fishing boats in the area have unnerved Jakarta, prompting Indonesia's Navy to conduct a large drill in July of 2020 in waters around Natuna at the southern portion of the South China Sea. Indonesia sees the current exercises with the United States as a deterrent in defense of the Natuna Islands, while for Washington, the drills are part of efforts to forge a united front against China's military buildup in the South China Sea, Bakri had said. Well, Indonesia wants to send a message that it is fully prepared for any high-intensity conflict in the South China Sea area, she said. Joint combat exercises end this Sunday. So unbelievable, the sort of stuff that's going on, but in order to be aware of what's happening and the ramifications of things, we need to be aware of what is happening here. Now, let's look at this. Well, there are strikes at the Ukraine nuclear plant, which have led the United Nations chief to call for a demilitarized zone. Russia and Ukraine accused each other of shelling Europe's biggest nuclear power plant as the United Nations chief proposed a demilitarized zone at the site amid fears of a catastrophe. Follow our live updates in order to get an understanding of the latest developments in the war in Ukraine. Well, the first United Nations chartered vessel set to transport grain from Ukraine under a deal to relieve a global food crisis should dock in Ukraine on Friday, the United Nations had said. The MV Brave Commander, which left Istanbul on Wednesday, is due to arrive in Yuzhne, east of Odessa, on the Black Sea coast, United Nations World Food Program had said. It will collect Ukrainian wheat grain purchased by the WFP, the agency's spokesman Thompson Fury had said. This is obviously the first shipment of humanitarian food assistance under the Black Sea Grain Initiative, he said. On July 22, Kyiv and Moscow signed a landmark deal with Turkey to unblock Black Sea grain deliveries following Russia's February invasion of Ukraine. Well, Turkey has opened a special facility in Istanbul at the mouth of the Black Sea to oversee the exports. It is staffed by civilian and military officials from the warring sides and delegates from Turkey and the United Nations. Well, the Czech Republic, which holds the rotating European Union presidency, said on Friday that a blanket ban on visas for all Russian travelers could be the bloc's next sanction on Moscow. Well, the flat halting of Russian visas by all European Union member states could be another very effective sanction. That's what Czech Foreign Minister Jan Lipavský said in a statement obtained by Agence France Presse. Well, he said he would propose the idea at an informal meeting of European Union foreign ministers in Prague at the end of August. In a time of Russian aggression, which the Kremlin keeps on escalating, there cannot be talks about common tourism for Russian citizens, said Lipavský. The European Union has so far come up with 6 sanction packages against Russia. Well, the IAEA Director General speaks at the United Nations Security Council on Zaporizhia, or the risks of in Zaporizhia. But during the United Nations Security Council meeting today, IAEA Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi, quote, seemed cautious and didn't point the finger towards Russia or Ukraine, but talked to both parties and said that while there is no immediate threat right now, the situation could change any moment. He called on both parties to stop any military action close to the plant. And so we'll have to see where that goes. The fighting near Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant has raised fears that shelling around the plant could lead to nuclear fallout akin to the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear disaster in then Soviet Ukraine, which killed hundreds of people and spread radioactive contamination over much of Europe. Zaporizhia is the biggest nuclear power plant in Europe, supplying Ukraine with 20% of its electricity. There is a suspicion that the Russians want to cut the power plant off from the rest of Ukraine and reconnect it to the Russian and Crimean grid, but there is no proof of that at the moment. That's what the report by Rob Parsons of France 24's chief foreign editor had said. Well, blast this week at the Russian-operated Saki military airfield in western Crimea led to the loss of 8 Russian combat jets, degrading its Navy's Black Sea aviation fleet, Britain said on Friday. While the damaged jets are only a fraction of the overall aviation fleet, Britain said that Black Sea capability would be affected since Saki is used as a primary operational base. Well, the base airfield probably remained operational, but its dispersal area had suffered serious damage. Britain's defense ministry added in a regular intelligence bulletin on Twitter. The explosions, which Russia has said killed 1 and injured 5, will prompt its military to revise the threat perception in the region, the ministry had added. Well, 2 more ships left from Ukraine's Black Sea ports on Friday, Turkey's defense ministry said, bringing the total number of ships to depart the country under a United Nations broker deal to 14 and marking the first export of wheat. Belize flag Somorovsky left Ukraine's Chornomorsk port carrying 3,050 tons of wheat to Turkey's northwestern Tekirdağ province, it said. Also, Marshall Island flag Star Laura departed from Pizdenil and headed to Iran, carrying 60,000 tons of corn. The head of the United Nations nuclear watchdog told the Security Council that fighting near Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant has sparked a grave crisis after Kyiv and Moscow again accused each other of shelling near the site. Quote, this is a serious hour, a grave hour, and the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Agency, must be allowed to conduct its mission to Zaporizhia as soon as possible, Rafael Grossi had said. Both the Russians and Ukrainians said radiation levels at the plant were normal. Ukraine's nuclear agency, Energoatom, says that the latest strikes were close to one of the plant's 6 reactors and that radiation sensors were damaged. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urges the international community to, quote, react immediately, end quote, to force Moscow's troops to leave the plant, denouncing, quote, Russian nuclear blackmail, end quote, in his daily address to the nation. Of the United States supports calls by the United Nations and others to establish a demilitarized zone around the plant. And the tensions have brought back memories of the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear disaster in the Soviet Ukraine, which killed hundreds of people and spread radioactive contamination over much of Europe. Very, very frightening, to say the least. So, now let's just quickly look to see what else we can look at here. And this is very interesting because, in seconds here, sorry, no, 1 second. Where I'm looking for. Where are we? Okay, let's look at this because there is an Arctic warming that is taking place, which is 4 times faster than the rest of the Earth and more than projected. Well, it seems the Arctic has warmed nearly 4 times faster than the rest of the planet over the last 40 years, according to research published yesterday that suggests climate models are underestimating the rate of polar heating. Well, the United Nations Climate Science Panel said in a special report in 2019 that the Arctic was warming by more than double the global average, quote-unquote, due to a process known as Arctic amplification. And this occurs when sea ice and snow, which naturally reflect the sun's heat, melt into seawater, which absorbs heat instead. So while there is a long-held consensus among scientists that the Arctic is warming quickly, estimates vary according to the time frame studied and the definition of what constitutes the geographic area of the Arctic. A team of researchers based in Norway and Finland analyzed four sets of temperature data gathered by satellite studies since 1979, the year when satellite data became available over the entire Arctic Circle. They found that on average, the data showed the Arctic had warmed 0.75 degrees centigrade per decade, nearly four times quicker than the rest of the planet. The take in the literature is that the Arctic is warming about twice as fast as the globe. So for me, it was a bit surprising that ours was so much higher than the usual number. Antti Lipponen, the co-author from the Finnish Meteorological Institute, advised. Well, the study, published in the journal Communications Earth and Environment, found significant regional variations in warming rates within the Arctic Circle. For example, the Eurasian sector of the Arctic Circle near the Svalbard and Novaya Zemlya archipelagos has warmed as much as 1.25 degrees centigrade per decade, seven times faster than the rest of the world. The team found that even state-of-the-art climate models predicted Arctic warming to be approximately one-third lower than what they observed data showed. They said that this discrepancy may be due to previous modeled estimates being rendered out of date by continued Arctic modeling. Maybe the next step would be to take a look at the models, and it would be really interested in seeing why the models do not reproduce what we see in observation and what impact that is having on future climate projections, said Lipponen. As well as profoundly impacting local communities and wildlife that rely on sea ice to hunt, intense warming in the Arctic will have worldwide repercussions. The Greenland ice sheet, which recent studies warn may be approaching a melting tipping point, contains enough frozen water to lift Earth's oceans some 6 meters high. Unbelievable. Climate change is caused by humans. As the Arctic warms up, its glaciers will melt, and this will globally affect sea levels, said Lipponen. Something is happening in the Arctic, and it will affect us all. So these are, I don't think these are hysterical prognostications. So I don't know if we're really paying attention, which is really what's very, very interesting. So we'll have to see where all this goes. One second. Now, let me just quickly look at some other things here. One moment. Where are we? Well, there are fires that are going crazy in France. So let's quickly look at that. Seems that five more European Union nations are going to help France combat wildfire. As French officials warned on Thursday that flare-ups could cause a massive wildfire to further spread in the country's parched southwest, President Emmanuel Macron that five more European allies are providing help for firefighters battling eight major wildfires across the country. Prime Minister Elisabeth Borne will meet with authorities battling the Landiras blaze south of Bordeaux, and further reinforcements are expected for the 1,100 firefighters on site at the prefecture of the Gironde Department had said. Currently, 8 major wildfires are raging in France, and Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin, who was also heading to meet Gironde officials on Thursday, said that Sweden and Italy were sending firefighting aircraft to help. Well, President Emmanuel Macron added via Twitter that Germany, Greece, Poland, Romania, and Austria are also providing help. Quote, our partners are coming to France's aid against the fires. Thank you to them. European solidarity is at work. I don't think I speak French very well, but Emmanuel Macron said, l'Allemagne, la Grèce, la Pologne, et dans les prochains heures, la Roumanie et l'Autriche, nos partenaires venant en aide à la France face aux incendies. Merci à eux, la solidarité européenne et l'œuvre, which is what I read to you in English. Conditions are particularly difficult. The vegetation and soil are exceptionally dry. The prefecture of the Gironde department, that's the section in France, said in a statement warning that extreme dry heat is likely throughout the weekend. There is a very serious risk of new outbreaks, it said. Temperatures in the region are topping 40 Celsius. That's about 104 degrees Fahrenheit on Thursday, and weather forecasters predicted more. The wildfire first erupted a month ago in July, the driest month seen in France since 1961, destroying 14,000 hectares and forcing thousands of people to evacuate before it was contained. But it continued to smolder in the tinder-dry pine forest and peat-rich soil, and officials suspect that arson may have played a role in the latest flare-up, which has burned 6,800 hectares, which translates to, in American terms, 17,000 acres since Tuesday. Well, we battled all night to stop the fire from spreading, notably to defend the village of Belin-Bellier. Lieutenant Colonel Arnaud Mendus of the Gironde Fire and Rescue Service told journalists in nearby Ostens. 17 homes have been destroyed or damaged since Tuesday. Nearly 10,000 people evacuated, but no further orders to leave the area are expected for the time being, Mendus had said. Acrid smoke has spread across a huge swath of the Atlantic coast and its beaches that draw huge crowds of tourists each summer, with the regional ARS health agency strongly, quote-unquote, urging people to wear protective face masks. The smoke also forced the closing of the A63 motorway, a major artery towards Spain between Bordeaux and Bayonne. France has been buffeted this summer by a record drought, has forced water use restrictions nationwide, as well as a series of heat waves that many experts say are being driven by climate change. Currently, there are 8 major wildfires raging in several parts of the country. The Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin, who is also heading to meet Gironde officials on Thursday, said that Sweden and Italy were sending firefighting aircraft to help. It's absolutely mind-boggling what's happening, and so quickly. It really is just amazing, literally amazing. I'm sure you've heard of this, but I was taken aback. Remember actress Anne Heche? She has evidently, one second here. She is not expected to survive after a crash, and she's got brain damage, from the accident. It really is a horror. Such a young woman. You know, what do you say? I don't know what you say. It's just very frightening. Talented woman. Just a horror. A horror that unfortunately is repeated in many places by many people that are not well known, but it's still a major tragedy and a major loss. Okay, one second. Now let's just look at some other things that you might find interesting. And this is really fascinating as well. In Germany, the Rhine water levels are expected to drop even further. Already critically low water levels in Germany's most important waterway could drop even lower next week. Shipping costs have climbed as much as 5 times as barges are forced to carry fewer goods. Because of the weight, German authorities are bracing for further shipping disruptions due to low levels in busy waterways. The Federal Institute of Hydrology, the BFG, has forecast that water levels in the Rhine River will continue dropping until the beginning of next week. BFG expert Bastian Klein told Germany's GPA press agency that shallow draft barges can pass through the middle Rhine in levels as low as 30 to 35 centimeters. But by next week, levels at the Kalb Gate, the most important water level measure station in the middle Rhine, could slip to 30 centimeters, potentially bringing traffic to a standstill. Well, the Kalb Gauge is located around 50 kilometers downstream from the city of Mainz, M-A-I-N-Z. Fully loaded ships generally need a level of at least about 1.5 meters, and lack of rain and high temperatures have led to low water levels. Barges on the Rhine, which carry critical supplies for German industrial giants and coal for power plants, are already being loaded at just 1/4 to 1/2 capacity to keep them higher in the water. Boats are also in shorter supply than normal due to increased demand for coal amid the energy crisis and some ships being diverted to pick up Ukrainian grain via the Danube. This has pushed up shipping costs by as much as 5 times, according to industry reports. Germany's transport and economy ministries are working to divert supply chains to rail and are considering intervening to prioritize critical goods, a transport ministry spokesman told Reuters agency. In 2018, even lower water levels led to production problems and supply bottlenecks for German companies. Other rivers have faced similar problems, leading to problems for the tourist industry. For example, low water levels in the Weser, in Germany's northwest, have led to the cancellation of tourist ferries. And in Lake Constance, on the border with Switzerland and Austria, pleasure boats have been left stranded as water levels drop to lows not seen since 2003. Shipping issues may also affect the upcoming grain harvest in Germany, with the Raiffeisen Association telling public broadcaster SWR that storage areas in southern Germany are already full and the grain cannot be transported away in sufficient quantities. To replace one barge, up to 40 trucks are required to carry the same load of grain. And the trucking industry has long complained of a shortage of drivers, a situation only exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. Well, there are increased chances of recession. A study by British analysis firm Capital Economics, released on Thursday, found that the low water levels have increased the chance of a recession in Germany. Potentially costing 0.2 percentage points of economic growth in the third and fourth quarters. Capital Economics chief economist Andrew Kenningham said that Germany is dually reliant on its rivers to transport freight, especially for industrial raw materials such as coal, crude oil, coke, and basic chemicals. Separately, masses of dead fish were reported in the eastern Oder River. Reports from Brandenburg said several tons of dead fish washed up on the banks of the river in Brandenburg. Water levels are currently low in the Oder, but authorities are investigating whether the river, which runs through Poland, was polluted. Workers dealing with the Dead Sea reported that skin rashes from contact with the water. Go figure. Unbelievable sort of stuff that's happening. Bear with me one second as we move on to some other issues. A little bit closer to home, the United States Justice Department has moved to unseal the Trump Mar-a-Lago search warrant. Well, the United States Attorney General Merrick Garland said he, quote, personally, end quote, approved the FBI search on Donald Trump's Florida home and would seek legal approval to reveal more details of why the search warrant has been issued. Well, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said on Thursday that the Justice Department had asked a Florida court to unseal the search warrant for former U.S. President Donald Trump's Florida home. He cited, quote, substantial public interest in this matter, end quote, in unsealing the search warrant and the itemized receipt of what was seized. It was the first time that Garland had spoken publicly about the search. FBI agents searched Trump's Mar-a-Lago property on Monday, reportedly looking for classified documents that should have been turned in after his presidency. Some of those documents were related to nuclear weapons. The Washington Post reported that on Thursday, citing an anonymous source close to the investigation. Well, the unannounced operation on Trump's Florida home was a politically explosive escalation of a federal investigation into whether the former president illegally removed records from the White House. Since Monday's search, Garland and his department have faced a fierce backlash from the Republican Party as well as Trump and his supporters. Well, the Trump supporters are turning on law enforcement. Earlier on Thursday, a man wearing body armor and carrying an AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle and nail gun attempted to overwhelm security at an FBI field office in Ohio. He was injured in a subsequent shootout and died later that evening. U.S. media identified the man as a Trump supporter with extreme right-wing views. Police did not officially announce a motive. Unfounded attacks on the integrity of the FBI erode respect for the rule of law and are a grave disservice to the men and women who sacrifice so much to protect others, FBI Director Christopher Wray said in a statement. Trump is not opposed to the unsealing warrant. Trump did not provide further details on the search or the details of the warrant, but underscored that his department would not undertake such a search lightly. Garland said he had personally approved the FBI's search of Trump's property. Trump said late on Thursday night he would not stand in the way of the unsealing of the warrant. Not only will I not oppose the release of documents, I am going a step further by encouraging the immediate release of those documents, he wrote on Truth Social, the social media site he launched earlier this year. In a separate post, Trump reiterated his claim that the search was an unprecedented political weaponization of law enforcement, end quote. The motion to unseal the warrant appeared to confirm the operation was searching for classified documents. Quote, the occurrence of the search and indications of the subject matter involved are already public, the Justice Department wrote in a court filing, citing a New York Times article on the search. Trump and his lawyers have copies of the documents but have not yet shared them with the public. A lot of stuff is happening on a world scale. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. 1 second. And this is interesting with regard to the World Cup. It's an opinion piece. World Cup 2022. There's no anticipation, only chaos in the nation of Qatar. With 100 days to go until the World Cup kicks off in Qatar, soon the focus will be on football. However, the sense of anticipation that usually exists before a World Cup is notably absent, wrote Deutsche Welle's Pascal Jochen. And when we're talking about the World Cup, we're talking about soccer. One thing is certain. The new stadiums will glitter. The skyline of Doha, the capital, will glow in bright colors. FIFA will get the spectacle it's after, and Qatar will get the attention on a major world stage, which it so desires. The host team now even gets to play the opening match a day earlier than originally scheduled on November 20. Millions worldwide will surely tune in for that match between Qatar and Ecuador. After all, it is the World Cup, the greatest show on earth. FIFA has changed the schedule to please Qatar just 3.5 months before the start of the tournament, so cue the euphoria. But wait a minute. Are any fans truly looking forward to this World Cup? Will youngsters buy up Panini stickers in the hopes of completing the set in their albums when the series is released in September? That's certainly what I did ahead of every World Cup when I was a little boy, but this time there is simply no air of excitement. There is skepticism and criticism, which does prevail. Of course, we in the Western world have our own partly romantic view of football or soccer. Public viewing at the Christmas market is not one of them for many fans in Europe. But the tiresome Eurocentric discussion about the Winter World Cup misses the point. In other regions, this World Cup is viewed more positively. After all, this will be the first time that the tournament is to be hosted by a country in the Arab world and one with a Muslim-majority population to boot. In Arab countries like Morocco, Tunisia, or Egypt, where football has a long tradition and enthusiastic supporters, a World Cup probably wouldn't be financially viable, so it's only logical that the task of hosting it has fallen to the Gulf region. Nevertheless, the premier continues to be dogged by skepticism. This is due not only to the corruption surrounding the awarding of the hosting rights, but also Qatar's sports washing strategy and the plight of migrant workers. According to Amnesty International, their situation remains precarious despite improvements that have been implemented over the years. And shortcomings in terms of the organization of the World Cup are becoming increasingly apparent. Too few hotels for the fans, that's another problem. Many fans with tickets still do not know where they will stay. According to the World Cup Organizing Committee, 100,000 rooms, including not only hotels but also creative options such as tent camps and cruise ships, will be available. But especially in the group phase, when all 32 teams will be involved, 3 times as many visitors as beds are expected. There's already talk of an airlift. Fans are to fly in from surrounding Gulf states on the mornings of games and fly back out in the evening. with 160 shuttle flights planned per day. That's 3,520 more flights than were already scheduled to begin with. Whatever happened to the promise that this would be a climate-neutral World Cup in which little travel would be required? The topic of greenwashing will continue to accompany us, also due to the energy crisis in Europe triggered by the war in Ukraine. A fun fact, the energy consumption in a fully air-conditioned football stadium is about the same per game as in a small town, in other words, between 5,000 to 10,000 inhabitants of the same time period. What about compensation payments for the families of foreign workers? What about the fears of the LGBTQ+ community? Speaking to Deutsche Welle recently, Human Rights Watch stressed that FIFA should have advocated much more strongly for reforms in the country. Homosexuality remains banned in Qatar. It is, however, off the table. All these critical voices will slowly fall silent at the latest when FIFA beams its glamorous pictures around the world. There's also little enthusiasm for a mass boycott. There are isolated initiatives among fans in Europe, but national teams officials agree. Go there, play the tournament to the end, and keep yourself in the conversation. European associations have announced the intention to coordinate protests against the human rights situation in Qatar. But what chance will they have in the midst of this glittering spectacle? So even if there is little enthusiasm at this point, it will certainly be worth taking a hard look at this World Cup. So we'll have to see where it goes. Very, very interesting, to say the least. Now, let's look at some other issues. Bear with me a moment as we move forward. One second here. One second, forgive me. I'll have to see where I put this. I thought I had posted this, but possibly not. One second. Okay, bear with me a moment here, because I must have it somewhere else. I thought I had posted, but evidently not. This is an opinion piece written by Marie Bell, based out of New Rochelle. And she writes that the fate of New Rochelle, or government, crime, court, and enforcement of the law. And the subtitle is Westchester District Attorney Questions Her Future Ability, quote unquote, to enforce the law in New Rochelle. I'll post this later on. Before being identified in 2020 as Ground Zero, later resulting in the deployment of the National Guard to one of the early epicenters for the COVID-19 pandemic, New Rochelle was hardly on the national stage, being mentioned daily in press briefings and even international news. Fear of traversing New Rochelle among outsiders became heightened due to the relative unknowns of COVID-19, and soon fear began to morph into stigma, resulting in even noticeable interruptions and complaints of avoidance in some deliveries of basic goods and services to a 1-mile containment zone in New Rochelle. Well, the COVID-19 cases in New Rochelle was described by then-Governor Cuomo as a phenomenon in his justification to sending the guards. City leaders and New Rochelle's Mayor Noam Bramson communicated through several virtual venues messages encouraging calm, non-judgmental response, collective resilience, and neighborliness, among reassurances that New Rochelle, its residents, and its leadership would weather the storm and its aftermath together. It is through times like this that the social fabric and collective efficacy of any community is tested. New Rochelle is emerging as strong as ever in economic development projects since the pandemic, and like all communities now memorializing the passing of loved ones, is becoming more aware of its role in global post-pandemic reordering. Some of the city's tactical response measures to COVID-19 in the early stages did bring some discontent and feelings of division and targeted isolation among residents, and it appeared communication and thoughtful rethinking in the interest of the community allowed for a timely and appropriate revisiting of those measures. Now, at certain times, communities must be assured that their shared values, expectations, and hope are in sync with those they elect to lead. New Rochelle is again in the throes of uncertain times and in the headlines again, awaiting two major decisions by the Westchester County District Attorney's Office. Excuse me. There is another pandemic. One second. There is another pandemic and one of national and statewide disorder and crime. And like COVID-19, isolation and containment zones will not suffice for the socially porous enclaves within Westchester County not yet designated as hotspots. For the less reported upon communities, there is a proliferation of deaths and overdoses linked to synthetic opioids like fentanyl. And as is inevitable, whenever there are illegal drugs and illegal marketing of prescription drugs, other elements of criminality become pervasive. So dismissing any ideas of zones of suburbial containment and relying sparingly on reactive measures, such as emergency antagonists like Narcan, the only workable solutions may be a coordinated victim-centered approach, a united front in the application of the law among purveyors of justice against criminals, and proactive and sustained restoration of our social infrastructure beyond aimless and election-induced spending of millions of dollars for restorative justice programs having inadequate oversight or inadequate measurable outcomes and which are devoid of accountability for recidivistic and wanton criminal behavior. Can New Rochelle be assured that crime will be effectively addressed if the prosecuting body under which the city falls expresses uncertainty in its, quote, future ability, end quote, to enforce the law in New Rochelle? This time around, we may not be able to hear Bramson's reassurance on this broader issue of any news, overshadowing the community, as it may be a conflict of interest given that he is awaiting the fate of the Westchester County District Attorney's Office, also central to this developing concern. Well, the Westchester County District Attorney's Office is currently reviewing allegations as to whether New Rochelle's mayor criminally violated the city charter in his bid to secure the job of Commissioner of Economic Development. The residents could only hold on to hope, hinged on his years of untarnished and responsive leadership, that his actions under investigation are not determined to have risen above a non-criminal threshold, and that he does not suffer a fate of unduly dispensable cancellation without the weighing of thoughtful mitigating factors, such as his contribution to public service, evidenced by his repeated success at being chosen by the residents to serve the community. For this case, which has propelled New Rochelle to the headlines, the court's decision upon being respected will beckon further, either for leniency or lack thereof, for severity. His record speaks to the former. It is noteworthy that the idea for him exploring this position reported came about when city manager Strome encouraged him, quote, to take a serious look at holding the job after the first search for commissioner failed, end quote. And this was confirmed by Strome, who had occurred over a year ago. This and the attending details leading to the criminal probe are reported in Mohud by David Proper. For Bramson to have acted subsequently and not as he was immediately nudged, whether due to assessing his personal readiness or by ushering New Rochelle through a period of post-pandemic uncertainty, speaks volume to his commitment to selflessly serving the city president's elected position. Strome knew his qualifications and his record then, provided they have not diminished over time, hence the reported fraud of confidence. The inquiries, consultations, and ethical findings detailed in emails and reports as to whether the decision was right for Strome to appoint Bramson constitute exactly how we need to see oversight bodies and ethics in public service operate. Strome's email to Bramson in the above link acknowledged that he was aware Bramson would have been disappointed in the final decision. Whatever initially brought on this awareness should have also behooved him to formally convene the necessary stakeholders along with Bramson to put an end to all future exploration of Bramson for his new job, which he admitted informally started with him. Well, the broader issue of ease related to the enforcement of the law is that New Rochelle has become the first jurisdiction, regrettably within Westchester County, to be the epicenter of a legal battle reported upon by Robert Cox of Talk of the Sound between Westchester County District Attorney Mimi Rocha and Judge Matthew Costa, resulting in the district attorney questioning her, quote, future ability to enforce the law in New Rochelle, and which has led the district attorney to haul the judge before the Supreme Court. Well, New Rochelle falls within New York's 9th Judicial District and has three sitting judges charged with adjudicating criminal cases prosecuted by the Office of the Westchester County District Attorney. The battle has emerged on the heels of the highly publicized court case involving New Rochelle Police Officer Michael Vaccaro, in which Judge Costa returned an unfavorable verdict to the prosecution. The actual case was briefly diverted due to a social media misunderstanding between the judge and the district attorney. However, the DA's office contends, as reported by Cox, that the outcome of this case has no bearing on the decision to bring Judge Costa to the Supreme Court forthwith. Having to denounce this piece of contextual information could potentially help to strengthen its biasing effect. Nonetheless, we disregard and proceed to strike. The two cases at the center of the Supreme Court reprimand of Judge Costa and the description of his actions with regard to those cases are detailed and quoted in Cox's above-linked article as an, quote, improper allegation of power, end quote, as described by the district attorney. Now, regardless of the legal outcome, the residents of New Rochelle and those who seek relief before the court in New Rochelle must be reassured that both parties will respect the decision of the Supreme Court and that they will be able to coexist and operate according to the law, in the interest of the people. And this will be a hard sell since it became necessary in the first place to seek redress through the Supreme Court. Trust and respect for the criminal justice process will always come into effect when cases are adjudicated by Judge Costa and by extension by the other nor shall judges, since it will never truly be known if a decision is fear-based or objectively determined. There are broader implications, too, for other Westchester jurisdictions. It is an uncertainty that no community will ever fully be comfortable with when liberty and constitutional rights are at stake. The implications of the Supreme Court decision also have the potential of bringing into question and under scrutiny both past and future decisions of Judge Costa. It has the potential of bringing new meaning and boundaries to the criminal justice process as being an adversarial one. The new Rochelle awaits the decision of the Supreme Court, and residents also await the assurance from their elected district attorney when confidence in her office's ability to enforce the law in New Rochelle has been restored under her leadership. While New Rochelle stands eager to resume the reassurances of stability in government and the preparedness for all possible social inevitabilities. Just so you know, the Yonkers Tribune welcomes the expression of views on a panoply of subjects that engage and concern our readers. The opinion and perspective viewpoints are welcome, and you can register for a user account. And just so you remember, in case you've forgotten, this article, Fate of New Rochelle, which deals with government, crime, court, and enforcement of the law, is written by Marie Bell, who kindly sent us her perspective, and we thank her for it. Okay, now bear with me a moment as we try to move on to some other issues. Bear with me a second. One moment here. Okay. This is really very interesting. This just arrived. The Westchester County Clerk received this on the 28th of March, January, March, yeah, March 28th. And this is a case that was filed with the Supreme Court of the State of New York in the County of Westchester by Jeffrey Sayers, who is a plaintiff, against JMR Rest Corp, doing business as Rory Dolenz and John Doe. They're the defendants. So to the above-named defendants, you are hereby summoned to answer the complaint in this action and to serve a copy of your answer, or if the complaint is not served with this summons, to serve a notice of appearance to the plaintiff's attorney within 20 days after service of this summons, or within 30 days after the service is complete, if this summons is not personally delivered to you within the state of New York, and in case of your failure to appear or answer, judgment will be taken against you by default for the relief demanded by the complaint. And this was dated on March 28th of 2022, signed by Sivan Miller and Roche LLP, Edward Sivan, attorney for the plaintiff. Plaintiff is based in New York. And this was sent to JMR Rest Corp at 8890 McLean Avenue. So, the plaintiff, by his attorney, Sivan Miller and Roche, LLP, are complaining of defendants, alleges as follows upon information and beliefs, that at all times herein mentioned, the plaintiff was and is a resident of the County of Westchester, State of New York, that at all times herein mentioned, defendant JMR Rest Corp, doing business as Rory Dolan's, hereinafter JMR, was and is a domestic corporation organized and existing under the laws of the state of New York, with its principal place of business in the county of Westchester in the state of New York. That at all times herein mentioned, JMR was doing business as and owned and operated a restaurant and bar known as Rory Dolan's, located at 890 McLean Avenue in Yonkers, New York, 10704. That at all times herein mentioned, the defendant John Doe is a fictitious name intended to designate an employee of JMR who was working at Rory Dolan's in the early morning of November 25, 2021, and whose identity is unknown to plaintiff. That at all times herein mentioned, John Doe was acting within the course and scope of his employment with JMR. That alternatively, JMR, or rather John Doe, was acting outside the scope of his employment with JMR. And these are the facts that are listed. Plaintiff repeats and realleges each and every allegation set forth above, as though fully set forth at length herein. That on November 25 of 2021, plaintiff was a lawful customer at and of Rory Dolan's. That at all times herein mentioned, JMR was under a duty to operate Rory Dolan's in a safe and lawful manner. Such that patrons thereat would not be caused to sustain personal injuries. That at all times herein mentioned, JMR was under a duty to control and supervise the patrons at Rory Dolan's in a safe and lawful manner, such that those patrons would not be caused to sustain personal injuries. That at all times herein mentioned, JMR was under a duty to exercise reasonable care in the hiring, training, supervision, and retention of its employees, such that its employees would be fit to operate, control, and supervise Rory Dolan's and the patron's threat in a safe and lawful manner, and such that those employees would not cause harm to patrons of Rory Dolan's. That on November 25 of 2021, at approximately between 3 in the morning and 3:45 a.m., while plaintiff was lawfully on the premises of Rory Dolan's, as a customer of Rory Dolan's, John Doe grabbed plaintiff around the neck and head, forcibly dragged plaintiff through and outside the bar and restaurant, and caused plaintiff to be precipitated to the ground with great force. That the actions of John Doe were undertaken without justification or provocation and without plaintiff's consent. That the actions of John Doe were intentional and malicious in nature. That alternatively, the actions of John Doe were reckless and negligent in nature and were undertaken without exercising reasonable care for plaintiff's safety. That as a result of the foregoing, plaintiff sustained severe personal injuries, including but not limited to fractures, to endure pain and suffering and loss of enjoyment of life, incurred and will continue to incur medical expenses and other economic loss, and has been otherwise damaged. That following the incident on November 25, 2021, JMR approved, condoned, ratified, and covered up the aforementioned conduct of John Doe. That all of the causes of action herein fall within one or more of the exceptions set forth in CPLR Article 16 with respect to joint and several liability. As and for a first cause of action against both defendants and parentheses battery. Plaintiff repeats and realleges each and every allegation set forth above as though fully set forth at length herein. The aforementioned actions by John Doe constitutes a battery for which John Doe is liable under New York State law and for which JMR is vicariously liable under the doctrine of respondeat superior. I haven't heard that term, so I don't fully understand that. As for a second cause of action against both defendants, negligence and recklessness in performance of duties, so plaintiff repeats and realleges each and every allegation set forth above as though fully set forth at length herein. Well, the aforementioned actions by John Doe constitute negligence and recklessness in the performance of his duties, for which John Doe is liable under New York State law, and for which JMR is vicariously liable under the doctrine of respondeat superior. As and for a third cause of action against JMR, negligent hiring, training, supervision, and retention. So, plaintiff repeats and realleges each and every allegation set forth above as though fully set forth at length herein. And then, in the event it is determined that the actions of John Doe were undertaken outside the scope of his employment, then JMR is liable to plaintiff for the negligence in its hiring, training, supervision, and retention of John Doe. Wherefore, plaintiff demands judgment against defendants and each of them in the form of compensatory damages and punitive damages in amounts that exceed the jurisdictional limitations of all lower courts and otherwise would have jurisdiction over this matter, together with the cost and disbursement of this action. That was dated March 28, 2022. Now we've got verification. Edward Sivin is an attorney duly admitted to practice law in the state of New York, hereby affirms the following under penalty of perjury that I am the plaintiff for the attorney for the plaintiff in the within action, that I have read the foregoing complaint and know the comments thereof, and the same is true to my knowledge, except as to matters herein state or therein stated to be upon information and belief, and as to those matters I believe it to be true. That the reason this verification is made by your affirmant and not by the plaintiffs is that plaintiffs do not reside in the county where their affirmant maintains his office. Therefore, that the grounds for your affirmant's belief as to all matters not stated above knowledge are as follows. Records, reports, facts, and documents contained in plaintiff's file maintained by our affirmant's office. And this was dated March 28, 2022, and underwritten by Edward Sivin. So we'll find out when that goes through the process of just going through the process. 1 second here. Let me just check into this. Bear with me a moment. Okay. One second. Bear with me a second here as I update this. I guess we could update this later on. Bear with me a moment. All right, let's just check what else is going on. I'm looking for something that just came in. One second. I don't know where this went. As I was reading, this news item came through, and it has to do with polio. Bear with me a moment as I try to find out where this is. Okay. Should be able to find it since I know what the subject matter is. One minute here. Okay. Bear with me a moment here. All right. I can't seem to find it, but based on what I was reading and at the same time looking at the news item, it seemed that polio has been, the polio has infected people here in Westchester County. But I'm not exactly sure because I haven't been able to find the notice of it. Bear with me one moment here, and I'm going to check one more thing. Very conceivable. You can find it. Bear with me a moment. Okay. One moment here. I thought I would find this here, but evidently not. Alright, we'll have to see where else we can get this. I'm not exactly sure where we can find this information, but it's evidently quite crucial. Can't imagine where it might be. One moment, actually. I'm going to try to see if I could find it here in one of the newspapers. Okay. I didn't find it in the New York Times. Maybe it's in the Daily News. I'll just check in a moment. Yep, here it is. I'm glad the Daily News had it. I didn't remember specifically where it was. Written by Tim Balk, B-A-L-K. I hope that's how he pronounces his name. Evidently, polio detected in New York City wastewater, health officials said. And this is written up in the Daily News. So polio has been detected in New York City. That's what the state health department said today. A jarring discovery based on wastewater samples that arrives 3 weeks after a case emerged in Rockland County. So before the Rockland County case, the U.S. had gone about a decade without logging any polio cases. But the reported arrival of the paralyzing virus in New York City suggested community spread. For every one case of paralytic polio identified, hundreds more may be undetected. That's what Dr. Mary Bassett, the state health commissioner, said in a statement. The detection of polio virus in wastewater samples in New York City is alarming, but not surprising. So for every one case of paralytic polio identified, hundreds more may be undetected, Dr. Bassett, the state health commissioner, said in a statement. Dr. Ashwin Vasan, the city health commissioner, urged New Yorkers to respond to the news by getting jabbed with a long-administered polio vaccine. The risk to New Yorkers is real, but the defense is so simple. Get vaccinated against polio, Vasan said in a statement. Polio is entirely preventable, and its reappearance should be a call to action for all of us. So this is very interesting. I remember my cousin had suffered polio. He overcame it years and years later, many, many years later, but she, I haven't seen her because she's no longer in the country, and I haven't been traveling to where she lives. The thing is that she suffered a major problem. One of her legs got shorter, and I don't know if she hobbles a bit at this point in life, but certainly she was in a leg brace for many, many years. And I don't remember if and when I got a polio shot, but I can't imagine that I didn't get a polio vaccine at a very early age. I think it must have been at about 6 or 7 that I got it. I have to reflect a lot more in order to find out what it was. I wonder though, because there is polio has been recognized to be in water, in wastewater. I wonder even if I'm in my 70s now, so even if I got something vaccinated, 65 years ago, 65, 66 years ago, I wonder if, as an older individual, I need to get another vaccine. So as we approach later on in the day, I'll give the doctor a call and find out what the best thing to do is, because I really have no idea. I get the impression after so many years, it probably is wisest to get a new inoculation, but it's not an issue that's been brought up in the reporting so far. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what that result will be. Okay, so all right, so we'll just have to see where it is. Now let me quickly look and see if there's anything else here where we could find out some more information. 1 minute. Let me try this as well. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, I'm not going to be in fear of polio, and I don't know what needs to be done in order to protect oneself with regard to polio today. Let me just see. This is interesting. They say that polio is extremely rare and that fewer than 1,000 U.S. cases take place in a year. One second. All right, hold on a minute. It looks like we're going to get some facts and information here. All right, let's just see what this is. Polio has been detected in New York City sewage, suggesting local circulation of the virus. That's what health officials are saying. And this was published 4 minutes ago. New York State Health Commissioner Dr. Mary Bassett called the findings alarming. Bassett said that local and federal health officials are aggressively assessing how far polio has spread in the city and in New York State. Polio can result in permanent paralysis of the arms and legs and death in some cases. Health officials are calling on people who are not vaccinated to get their shots immediately. Polio has been detected in New York City, suggested local circulation of the virus, health officials said today. The New York State Health Commissioner, Dr. Mary Bassett, called the findings alarming. Bassett said that local and federal health officials are aggressively assessing how far polio has spread in the city and in New York State. So for every one case of paralytic polio identified, hundreds more may be undetected, Bassett said. The best way to keep adults and children polio-free is through safe and effective immunization. Polio can result in permanent paralysis of the arms and legs and death in some cases. Health officials are calling on people who are not vaccinated to get their shots immediately. Routine vaccinations among children have declined in New York City since 2019, which has increased the risk of outbreaks, according to health officials. About 14% of New York City's children ages 6 months to 5 years old have not completed their vaccination series against polio, which means they are not fully protected against the virus. Overall, 86% of children ages 5 and under in New York City have received 3 doses of the polio vaccine, according to the health officials. But there are some neighborhoods in the city where less than 70% of children are up to date on their polio vaccine, which puts kids in these communities at risk of catching polio. New York State health officials confirmed last month that an unvaccinated adult in Rockland County, a suburb of New York City, caught polio and suffered paralysis. Polio was subsequently detected in sewage in Rockland County and neighboring Orange County. The strain that the unvaccinated adult caught is genetically linked to the sewage samples in Rockland and Orange County. It's unclear where the chain of transmission began, but health officials have said that the sewage samples indicate there's local spread of the virus in the New York City metropolitan area. Seems that 1 in 25 people who catch polio develop viral meningitis, and 1 in 200 will become paralyzed, according to health officials. Most people who catch polio do not develop symptoms, though some have symptoms similar to the flu, such as a sore throat, fever, fatigue, nausea, pain. And there is no cure for the disease, but it can be prevented through vaccination. The risk to New Yorkers is real, but the defense is so simple. Get vaccinated against polio, said New York City Health Commissioner Dr. Ashwin Vasan. Children should receive 4 doses of the vaccine, 1 dose at 6 weeks, through 2 months, a second dose at 4 months, a third at 6 months, through 18 months, and a fourth at ages 4 to 6 years of age. People who are unvaccinated older than age 4 should receive 3 doses of the vaccine. Adults who have received only 1 or 2 should get another one or two, no matter how long it's been since the earlier doses. The U.S. has declared was declared polio-free in 1979, though travelers have occasionally brought the virus into the country, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. New York State last confirmed a case in 1990, and the U.S. previously confirmed a case in 2013. Polio struck fear into parents' hearts in the 1940s before vaccines were available. More than 35,000 people became paralyzed from polio every year during that period, according to the CDC, but a successful vaccination campaign in the 50s and 1960s dramatically reduced the number of infections. So it seems to me, since I'm not aware whether I did or did not get vaccinated, that it may be prudent to get vaccinated. So this I'm going to have to find out today and see where it goes. 1 second. And let's look at some other things that you may find really quite pertinent. Bear with me a second here. With regard to Liz Cheney, it seems that Liz Cheney is urging the Justice Department to prosecute Trump if it finds evidence of crimes. The representative, Liz Cheney, urged the Justice Department to prosecute former President Donald Trump if it finds evidence he committed crimes in connection with the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. If the facts and the evidence are there and they decide not to prosecute, how do we then call ourselves a nation of laws? Cheney said in an interview with CNN. The question of whether Trump should face prosecution for his months-long effort to subvert the 2020 election is one that continues to divide the nation. And the anti-Trump wing of the Republican Party particularly. So Representative Liz Cheney urged the Justice Department yesterday to prosecute Donald Trump if it finds evidence that the former president committed crimes in connection with the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Not doing so could call into question whether America is a nation of laws, the Wyoming Republican said in an interview with CNN's Cassie Hunt. Cheney said that she believed the Justice Department will follow. They have to make decisions about prosecution, understanding what it means. And if the facts and the evidence are there and they decide not to prosecute, how do we then call ourselves a nation of laws? End quote. A leading voice of the House committee investigating the January 6th attacks, Cheney said he believes Trump is, quote, guilty of the most serious dereliction of duty of any president in our nation's history, end quote. Cheney cited a federal district court judge in California who said in March that Trump and conservative attorney John Eastman likely committed crimes in attempting to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election and keep Trump in office after voters had elected now President Joe Biden. But the question of whether Trump and his closest allies should face prosecution for their months-long effort to subvert the 2020 election is one that has roiled the anti-Trump wing of the Republican Party. On one side are voices such as Cheney, who insist that the facts must be followed, even if prosecuting Trump has the unintended consequence of making the former president a political martyr and an even more potent force in American politics. On the other side is a more cautious and altogether quieter group of Republicans who are concerned that the legal hurdles to providing Trump committed any serious crimes are too high to make it worthwhile. Prosecuting a former president of the United States without guaranteed conviction, they argue, would risk handing Trump an enormous political and moral victory and open the door to a future, more politically motivated prosecutions of former presidents. So this is going to be very, very telling based on these sort of issues that have come forward. All right, well, I don't think there's anything else we can cover today that I'm aware of. And so we'll end our broadcast today at 11:30. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourselves. And if you haven't become, you haven't been vaccinated, consider doing so for your child's health and for your own health. And just go from there. Take care and goodbye.